Today is February 10th, and I'm here with Keith and Nancy Green. And we are talking about one of the managers down at Phantom Ranch, who was kind of cheap, named, what was his name again?
Stu Kobritz.
And he pretty much every day serves stuffed peppers with
for the employee dinner.
How long did that go on for?
I don't know. This is all before me. But apparently they were serving, so they came up with stuffed green peppers one day for the employee dinner, and one of the cowboys, who was pretty darn rough, grabbed Stu and held him up and grabbed him by the collar and held him and put him up against the wall and said, we're having steak tonight. And Stu, of course, is getting scared and going, yeah, okay. And so every time that cowboy showed up, they had stew from then on.
Or steak. Okay. All right. Well, before I get into more questions, I have to tell you that my husband was working at the museum today, and he told me that somebody who said he was your neighbor on the South Rim and now lives near Vermilion Cliffs and is a maintenance man on the North Rim, and he's their longest working person on the North Rim, but Steve can't remember his name, and he's getting married on February 22nd, 2022. Do you guys have any idea who that could be?
He was our neighbor on the North Rim?
Your neighbor on the South Rim.
On the South Rim. Okay. Well, we didn't have any Park Service neighbors.
Sit next to you.
But I don't know what he meant by
that. I don't know. He said, I guess Steve told him that I was coming over to interview you guys, and he said, oh, I used to be their neighbor on the South Rim. Go ahead. Oh, we need her thing.
Do we know where it is, Nia? I'll go look for it.
It's usually in the kitchen somewhere. Well, I don't know if he was married at the time, but he's getting married. And if I can find out the guy's name, I'll let you know.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not sure who that would be.
But he said he's been working up there, I think, since about... No, were you still there in the 90s?
Yeah.
On the South Rim?
Yeah.
A little later than the 90s?
We were there until 2009.
On the South Rim?
Right.
So he said that he started up there around 2000. So that's this guy's era. He's been there, started in... on the South Rim around 2000, then he went to the North Rim. If you can remember anybody from then. Huh. Oh, she brought me water. Good. Well, anyways, I don't know who he is. But then I had a question about the story about the 50 cent employee beers.
Oh, yeah.
You want to tell that story? That was in the 70s, right?
Yeah, that was... in 1975, or starting in 19, well, I don't know how long it had gone on, but when I first started working there in 1975, There was two cases of beer in the refrigerator, in the reach-in refrigerator, and you could have a beer, but it costs 50 cents, so you're supposed to put 50 cents in the money. There was like a
place to put your money.
A place to put it, anyway. And it, anyway, you're supposed to put 50 cents in for every time you had a beer. Well, of course, at the time, everybody, you know, that was before the employee bunkhouse. So everybody hung out in the back room of the lodge and drank beer and talked and, you know, sometimes played games, cribbage and the like, and anyway, you know, you'd go get another beer, and you go, oh shoot, I don't have any more quarters, and you know, I'll put in a dollar next time, you know, and then you drink another beer, and you go, well, let me think now, do I owe more money, and you know, and anyway, the result was, of course, every day, the person who ran beer hall, part of his job was to count the money in the tip jar and deposit it, or not the tip jar, in the money in the there in the. And the beer bar, the where you paid for the beer. God, why can't I remember where that was? Anyway, and it was always way short. You know, like if there was 15 beers missing, there'd only be maybe $5 in the. Employee beer bucket, so it was always short, and so Terry Mache, who was kind of the new manager in 76, I think, when she first started, anyway. You know, she was probably the first manager that paid any attention to how much money Phantom Ranch was really making. And, so she was, you know, keeping books on everything. And the, employee beer bucket was always way short. So So she came up with this idea to get a machine, like
a dispenser machine.
Like a Coke machine. She found
vending
one.
Machine.
Like
a vending machine.
A vending machine, yeah. And she found one on the South Rim that they could change the runners on it so it would hold Coors beer, you know. Actually, I think we had Coors and Budweiser. Anyway, and it cost 50 cents. So, she had that flown down. I still remember the day they flew it down. So they flew down this vending machine, and we put it in the back room, and we'd load that up with beers, and anytime you wanted a beer, you had to put two quarters in the slot in order to get a beer. So
I hope it was worth it flying it down. I don't know how much money she was losing.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Well, she's losing a good $5 a day, I'd say.
Probably, and back least. In the day, 50 cents a beer was probably, you know, I don't know what a beer was in 1975. A buck,
well,
maybe?
Out front, it was, yeah, I think it was a dollar, maybe a dollar and a quarter. I don't remember, but anyway, so it was a great idea, we thought, you know, except, you know, well, the manager thought, anyway, Terry thought, anyway, it was a great idea. And, you know, it worked for a while, but eventually the thing started breaking down, as vending machines do, and it would take somebody with some knowledge about vending
like
machines.
Like a more mechanical person, yeah.
Yeah.
I wanted to tell you guys, I was up at the canyon yesterday, and I thought about you. We went to, we took packed a lunch, and we took our little dog, and we walked to... on the West Rim Trail to the point, what is it with the M? Mather, what's the M one out there? Mather Point?
On the West Rim?
On the West Rim, where you can keep walking past the monument.
Maricopa.
What is it called?
Maricopa
Point, is that one?
That's the first one, yeah.
Oh, we went further than that. We went out about a couple miles out and then turned and came back, but it was beyond where they have, you know where the uranium thing used to be? Out beyond the uranium. Right around that place, a little bit beyond that. And then we turned and came back. It was a beautiful day.
Right.
And hardly anybody there, you know.
Oh, wow, really?
Middle of the week type thing. Yeah. It was not very crowded. Which was nice because we could park right by the Alto Bar. And then we just, you know, took our lunch. We even brought a beer and just sort
amazing.
Of sat on a bench and had
so it's
lunch.
Finally, it's actually cool, calming down and out there.
Yeah, yeah.
Not so many people.
I think just maybe because school is back in session now and kids are really in school. So it was really crowded during, you know, the whole COVID thing when everybody was not working. But now I think more people are back to work. Well, let me ask another question. It says, you had mentioned something in your writings about ranch employees trying to catch a ride with the helicopter pilot to fly around Phantom Ranch. Do you remember anything about that?
Well, that only happened once as far as I know, but, well, it might happen more than once, but the time I remember had to do with let me think what was going on.
Did they just want to like get a like look at Phantom Ranch from above, or was there a reason why they wanted to just like a joyride?
It was during the construction of when they're constructing the sewage treatment plant.
Okay.
And the company had part of their budget was to have a helicopter to bring people and supplies in and out of the canyon. However, they didn't really need a helicopter pilot all the time. So this helicopter pilot was always sitting in the back room drinking coffee and waiting for, you know, the time when they needed a helicopter to do something. So anyway, so he was back there, and some of the employees got to talking to him and said, "Well, hey, can we go up and look at Phantom Rock and see what that looks like from the air?" And they talked to the pilot and said, "Oh, sure, let's go." And they went out, and I think at the time they were They had the helicopter out there in front of the dormitories, and they picked up. Anyway, they went on and they rode the helicopter up to see Phantom Rock.
To see what it looked like up close?
To see what it looked like up close, yeah, because from below it looks like, it looks kind of like a robed phantom.
Like a ghost.
Like a ghost, yeah. Except for, I don't know if it had to do with the drugs down there or what, but he looks like he's rolling a joint.
That's the first I've heard this.
He's got his arms up like this.
Okay.
And but anyway, they wanted to see, what it looked like from the air, and they went up there and they couldn't find it. They never could find it. They finally
decided.
It kind
of disappears as you're up there.
Yeah.
You can't see it as well.
Yeah, it must be, it's because of the angle you're at down below looking up at it. You can't see that it's actually part of a long wall.
Okay.
And all you can see is the
figure.
The figure. But from below, from above, looking down at it, they couldn't figure out where it was. They couldn't find it.
Okay, I wanted to talk about, it said that you guys would set live traps in the irrigation ditches to catch these squirrels, and then you would, you drowned them, right? Something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Were you involved in the drowning of the squirrels?
No, I wasn't, but that's what they were doing.
And then they laid them out for ravens to eat?
Yeah.
And you remember ever seeing those, or was that before your time?
No, that was while I was down there. The problem, of course, is that people keep...
Do you want to sit up? Can somebody help Nancy sit up a little? She's kind of down.
The problem is, of course, that people keep feeding the squirrels, or the squirrels break into people's backpacks, whatever, so the squirrel population just keeps rising and rising and rising, it got to the point where, a squirrel track was this solid line with footmarks on either side because the squirrels were so fat that,
oh my gosh,
they were dragging themselves around
from eating out of the hikers' packs.
Right.
Wow.
So, or getting fed by the hikers.
So, do you think they still have squirrel issues down there?
Oh, I'm sure. Sure they do, but I don't know, because they don't have right now, because of the COVID thing, I don't think they're having beer hall I don't believe the dining room is open.
It might be by now, because everything, when we were there, we were surprised everything was open.
Was
on
it?
The top, like the Alto Bar was open, and Bright Angel, the saloon in there was open.
Okay, well, maybe
they just finally reopened, because I know the time before we were there, it was closed.
Yeah.
So it might
be. Well, anyway, if so, then... Probably, the thing is, people just have to know not to
feed them.
Not to feed them, and not to just leave their packs outside the door.
And open.
And, back then, what was going on is we had it.
Come in.
Can you see who that is?
I got some rails for Nancy. Hello.
Hello.
I have some rails for Nancy.
Oh, awesome.
Some bed rails.
Yes, perfect.
Bed rails. Oh. Okay.
Okay. And I wanted to know, were you working at Phantom Ranch when the pool was filled in, or had it already been filled in?
It had already been filled in.
Okay.
And,
okay.
But anyway, the thing with squirrels was, you know, the, I mean, they kept trying, you know, they kept becoming a nuisance. Mostly it was when, you know, for a long time, when I was down there, there was a canteen window on the side of the lodge.
Mm-hmm.
And we served everything from sandwiches to hot dogs and candy bars and stuff like that through this canteen window. And so people had a tendency to put their packs down and just leave it and go over to stand in line in the window or something.
And then the squirrels
would attack.
Okay.
So that's why there's so many squirrels. Anyhow, and that's not happening anymore, so maybe that's not a problem so much.
They don't serve it out of the window like that anymore?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I mean, for a while there, they were serving dinners out the window, but that was because of COVID. Anyhow, the kind of the way it worked was we'd catch them with live traps. We'd catch the squirrels with live traps and then take the trap over to the irrigation ditch.
Ooh.
And drown the squirrel in the irrigation ditch. And then, yeah, they'd take them out and lay them on the riprap, the kind of, fencing kind of material that was holding the banks of the creek
mm-hmm.
down. And anyway, they put them on that, and the ravens would come down and eat the squirrels.
Would they do it in between? Like, would they do it, like, after the dudes had gone up and then before the next mule train came down?
Yeah, we tried to do that, you know, to have that all done in the morning.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to see it. That'd be awful. I wanted to ask her, do you know if they're still getting like 50 tourists at Christmas time? You talked about how sometimes at Christmas it would be pretty busy down there for Christmas dinner.
Uh-huh.
Do they still get a lot of people down there, or were they when by the time you retired?
Yeah, it still was pretty busy, but, you know, like I said, the COVID thing probably stopped that for a while.
Probably for the last couple of years, at least.
Yeah.
Let's see. Were you around when Supai the Mule lived there?
Yes, I think so. Supai.
I don't know how he ended up kind of becoming a pet or something.
Supai the Mule. Let me think. God, I can't think of that story.
Tom Pete Peters, a mule guide storyteller. Do you remember him?
Yeah.
Pete Peters. I don't know if that was his mule, pet, or...
I don't know. I don't know that story. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm not sure when he lived there, because I didn't write a date down there. Well, go ahead. When did Supai live down there? That mule. You remember him or anything about him? No. Okay, so let's see. Let me just take a quick look here, and then we talked about that, and then no. in 77, Bantam Ranch was remodeled. Was that, was your guy who you called Bob Wire, who we now know is somebody else named Don somebody Weir?
Don Weir, yeah.
Was he there during the whole remodel thing?
77.
It said Fred Harvey Maintenance did most of the work and Tommy Lopez was the boss of the crew.
No, I think Terry Mache was still the manager then.
Okay.
In 77. Because they were always calling her the boss. The
go ahead. Say again. Rebecca? You remember Rebecca?
No, Rebecca is this woman that's helping us.
Oh, hey, Rebecca, excuse me.
Well, she's helping with a... What did you need, Nancy?
What do you need, Nancy? Something to drink?
No, it's just going
to ask. Is it what she said? Say again?
This guy was working.
He's going to be doing something with the bars on your bed?
Yeah.
Do you want to see what's happening?
Maybe she does. Let me go. Let me just get her real quick. Okay, do you remember Tommy Lopez?
Oh, yeah. He was funny. He was a...
Take back.
He had one finger missing, I remember that. His index finger.
Okay, sounds good.
I think he did.
Yeah, he's putting those rails on.
I remember for sure.
So hopefully that will be helpful and you can hold on.
Okay.
This guy, we might not.
You know the story, Tom.
And if we can do it without the
people, then we can told that story.
Yeah, we can save some money and just do like a la carte or something. We could have a little bit more.
There was some kind of a story about a fly swatter.
About what?
A fly swatter?
A fly swatter, well.
He had a sense of humor, you said. He was the boss of the construction crew, and there was something with a fly swatter.
Yeah, well, one time I was flipping pancakes when he came in, and he told me that, and I was standing there with the, you know, that we had pancake flippers, what are those called? Spatulas.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
We had spatulas that were, you know, had a long handle, and you know, that we, because we had to be able to flip pancakes fast, and so I was standing there with that, and with that spatula, and Tommy came in and said, "Keith, you're flipping your pancakes with a fly swatter." People thought that was funny. Would not.
That wasn't very nice of him.
Really.
It said that you had to move from building, kind of from one building to another as the work proceeded with the renovations down there?
Right. Well, because they were, first of all, redoing the dormitories, and we were living in at least one of the dormitories. They're not dormitories, they're one of the, well, they used to call them the tent tops. And
the tent top dorms, she said.
Yeah. And we had to move from one to another. I remember, I think I had to move from the tent tops over to the employee dorm, which wasn't a dorm yet. See, the employee dorm was, when I moved down there, it was kind of divided into thirds, and the third that was closest to the creek was one room, and it was the fireplace and it opened up on either side onto a porch, and so there was a porch that was about maybe 6 feet wide on either side of the employee dorm going the length of it.
Okay.
Anyway, it was in thirds, and the front third was all one room with a fireplace in it, and that was one of the employee houses, and that was the one I got moved into. And then the middle third was the cowboy dorm.
Okay.
And then the far third was a public restroom.
Okay.
So.
And they remodeled that, or is that how they?
Oh yeah, that was part of the.
The big remodel?
The remodel was, they made that, I'm pretty sure that's when they made that into a dormitory. That was probably the major part of it. They made it into a employee dormitory, so they made those porches into rooms.
Okay.
So they had three rooms on either side, and then kind of a employee rec room in the where the fireplace was.
Did the employees like it better? Or did they miss the porches?
I think they liked it better.
Because they had like more room?
More room, yeah. Yeah,
okay.
Sure.
Let's see. Fat of snoring. Don First Day. Oh my.
How about this? The flood? Did you get that part?
Yes. I got. Let me see. The flood? Was that the same time that you had to rescue Nancy?
No,
different time.
Yeah.
Okay, so there was a flood in 16. In 95, is that right?
No, this is in 68.
Oh, the flood in 68 was rain on snow.
Uh-huh.
And it brought fast-moving water down the creek on the north side.
Well, what it did was, it was when 1968 was when they were building the Cross Canyon Pipeline.
Okay.
Water line.
Mm-hmm.
And, there was a camp of workmen camped at Cottonwood, which is up the creek a ways.
He took it. Yep, I disinfected it. He won't take the bucket.
He won't.
No, they don't take the bucket, but he took the commode, and I disinfected it for him. Yeah. So I don't want to interrupt there. Sorry.
That's okay.
So anyway, up there, the flood was coming down Bright Angel Creek, and up at Cottonwood, it was so bad that it inundated the camp.
Okay.
And it washed some of their machinery down the creek.
Wow, that was a big one.
Yeah. And so, they were able to contact Panam Ranch, and this is all happening in the middle of the night, too.
Wow.
So they were able to contact Panam Ranch and tell them this flood was coming. And so Minnehaha was the manager at the time, and Minnehaha went around and woke everybody up and got everybody dressed, and they all climbed up into the cliffs on the beyond the east side of the ranch.
Okay.
And waited for this huge flood to come down. And when it did come, it wasn't quite enough to get Phantom Ranch, although the high water was up to close to the cabins.
Okay.
But it didn't get to any of the cabins. It got the swimming pool. And then it got on the other side of the, maybe it didn't get the swimming pool. I'm not sure about the swimming pool. But anyway, I think it did, because I remember it getting, apparently it got filled up with
like
debris from it.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, it did get the Park Service ranger station that had as a watermark. I think that you can still find the watermark in it. It's about maybe 3 feet up from the floor.
Wow, that's a lot of water.
And the trail crew bunkhouse actually got picked up on its off of its moorings and moved.
Okay.
So.
Where does it go?
Hmm.
Where does it go?
So anyway, it was quite a flood for that area, and then of course it got the campground and the buildings below, and the buildings below too, I think.
Keith, I'm sorry. Can I take this pillow and have Nancy use it?
Oh, sure.
Okay. All right, Nancy, we gotta be quiet now.
Oh, just to prop her up a little more.
It's a little bit skinnier than
the
other
one. Yeah. Good.
How's that? Is that okay?
Better.
Better. I'm just gonna be doing meds in here. Okay.
Okay. So did it said that you had said somewhere in there that they had to rebuild the bridge to cross the creek and raise the level of the water pipe?
Yeah, yeah. Actually, come to think of it, it was so big that
that's okay. She's because from sitting up, it kind of maybe helped her breathing a little. So go ahead.
But it washed out the creek. The creek used to flow out of Bright Angel Canyon and then kind of parallel to the Kaibab Trail down to the boat beach where where it would empty into the river.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, this washed it all out, and so I guess it pretty much flooded the, come to think of it, Gail Birak told me a story about how it flooded the delta.
Okay.
You know, all the way across. So
wow.
Looking across, there was no river.
Wow.
It was just all water.
Man.
You
had said that in 95, the water pipe also was mangled. Even though Bright Angel Creek bed had been dug deeper, the water still managed to jump the banks of the artificial ditch.
Yeah.
You were down there then, right?
Right. Well, no, I had come back. I was...
Back up?
Where, that
95.
Was when? 95?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, I would have been there. Anyway, or maybe I was... Well, I don't know. Anyway, 95, what? Huh?
They were on the. You were on the south rim in 95.
Yeah.
But you may have known about this mangling of the water pipe because you probably went up and down, right?
Yeah, of course. Was that the?
must have been some kind of big water in 95. Maybe that's when you say no.
Is that when the people got stranded? 95?
I didn't see anything about stranded. It said that there was a big monsoon storm in 84 that broke the dam which held Bowman Lake. That was created in 82 from a rock slide. The flood came down Phantom Creek, raising the level of Bright Angel Creek. That was 84.
Well, there's a date then.
Oh, did you want this?
No.
Oh. Figure out the...
Was 84 then when the flood that got us happened?
Yes, that would have been about right when you were that stuck was, on the rock.
Yeah.
Okay, so that was the storm of 84.
Well, so that didn't damage Phantom Ranch at all, that storm. I mean, it raised the creek about 3 or 4 inches, but it wasn't... You don't have to do anything.
Not enough to really flood the ranch or anything.
No.
Okay. It said that after, I don't know if you're talking about after this particular monsoon storm, but it said Phantom Creek lost some of its vegetation and the pools got filled with gravel. Would that kind of been... Did you have a lot of gravel come down?
This is still 84?
Well, that's about when I wrote, it was near, it said the big monsoon of 84 wiped out Bowman Lake, and then also wiped out some vegetation and the pools filled in with gravel.
Oh, okay.
So that must have been when you saved Nancy,
yeah.
That monsoon.
Well, it was... Yeah, it wasn't the monsoon. That monsoon had already happened. We were up there after.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Because the pools were already filled with gravel when we went up there.
Okay, so
that's the only way we escaped.
And that was because another storm rolls in when you're up there.
Yeah, this is just another storm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that caused a flash flood to come down the. Right, I found Creek.
Did you want to show me this? Or move it? Just get it out of here? Okay. Let's see. There was a fad of snorting tequila?
Snorting. Oh, yeah.
In the 70s and 80s?
Uh-huh.
And your friend Don Furr's face swelled up?
Yes.
Do you remember?
Yes.
Yeah. Do you remember any of that? It said that you lit matches in bottles causing an explosion. You put tequila in bottles?
No. Yeah, when you finished a bottle of tequila, you know, so it's an empty bottle, but of course it's still got the fumes in it. And right after you finish it, if you light a match and drop it into a bottle, into the tequila bottle, it makes this really pretty blue and yellow flame that slowly... descends down the walls of the bottle.
Oh.
It's really cool.
Okay. But you did say that there was somebody, you lit matches in a bottle causing an explosion, and somebody named Shannon.
Yeah, that's a funny story.
She like flew into cactuses or something?
Yeah. Yeah, see, up at the, behind the dorms, the tent tops or the dorms they call them now, behind those was a building which was just big enough for one or two people. It had a bed downstairs and a bathroom, and you could climb up a ladder to an upstairs bed. So it was actually for two employees. For a while it was called the assistant manager's cabin because the assistant manager, it was a nicer place than most of the places where people could stay, where employees live. But anyway, Steve Young, who was quite a quite good at working with outdoor, stuff. Anyway, had fixed it up to where outside the north door of that building, which would be just even with the north end of the furthest north of the four dormitories. Anyway. I don't know if he'd fixed it up, but anyway, there was this kind of a circle of a path, and in the middle of the circle was a big patch of prickly pear. The patch of prickly pear was probably about maybe 10 feet wide,
okay,
in diameter, and then around it as kind of a circle with some bricks, around it.
Okay.
And it made a nice, place to hang out.
Right.
After you finished working and when it got in the shade. And anyway, so we were all sitting over, we're all hanging out there, and this is Nancy's part of the story. She had invited down a bunch of school teachers from Sierra Vista.
Oh, no. And with all these wild people.
And so, it wasn't all of them, but a bunch of them were there. And there was this, one of them was this really pretty woman named Shannon. She was a blonde, about maybe 5.5 feet tall, and very beautiful anyway. And she and me and Steve Young, who was
your roommate,
my
right?
My roommate, were, and others, there were others that were there, and I don't remember who all was there. But anyway, we were all, Nancy was, for sure. Anyway, we were all sipping on a bottle of tequila, which they had brought down, by the way.
Okay.
all these school teachers, anyway. Anyway, we finished it. We were sitting around talking, and it got dark, and we finished it, and so we decided we were going to light the bottle. Like it was kind of a tradition to do, and because it was cool, and by that point everybody's not just drunk but probably high too, and so.
Tequila and pot even would be a really lethal combination.
Yes, it is. But anyway, so we were trying to light it, and we couldn't quite get it to light. We kept trying to get it light, and Shannon said, "Here, look, I'll do it." And she takes the bottle and she put it closer to the building. I guess it was a little windy, So that would make it so the wind wouldn't blow out the matches. So anyway, so she put it kind of across the path, you know, so picture this, you've got the big round patch of prickly pear cactuses, and then a pathway kind of going around the outside where people could sit and stuff, and then on the side of it is the assistant manager's cabin.
Okay.
You know, so anyway, she picked up the ball and put it over closer to the assistant manager's cabin, and so she had her back to the pathway, and on the other side was the island of prickly pear. And so anyway, she was successful. She got a match lit, but she made the mistake of bending down over the bottle.
Okay.
And she got she dropped the match in it, and that one, instead of the pretty flame going down, it just went whew,
right, you know, in her face.
And the you know, just a flame, you know, bleak, you know, came straight up, and
oh my
it
God.
Scared her, of course, and she jumped back and fell backwards into that big old patch of prickly pear cactuses. And the cactuses kind of opened up, and she fell in it, and they came back together. So there she was, under the all these prickly pears. And
you need water? Okay.
And Steve Young, who was the who was my roommate, was feeling very cavalier and helped her out of the
cactus.
Out of the cactus. But the problem was that they had come back together and put prickly pear spines all over her front.
Oh, no.
Her breasts and stuff. So so she was like covered with
prickly pear. Oh, my God. That's horrible. So you guys had to pull those things out of her?
Well, we didn't, but Steve-O, you know,
he helped her.
To do that. In fact, it took him all night to do that.
So they met and kind of liked each other, even through this thing.
Yeah.
Did your teachers ever go down with you again?
Well, I think one of the funny parts of that story is the next morning, because Steve-O had...
Do you need to sit up, Nancy?
Yeah.
A little more? What's her aide's name?
Rebecca.
No, hang on. To kind of sit you up a little higher. Hang on. How's that? Say again?
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. It must be horrible, that choking feeling. That's why I was banging you on your back. I know when I get like so much phlegm down there, that helps sometimes. But I don't want to break your back. So
anyway,
did they go ahead the next morning?
The next morning, like we were eating breakfast in that back room, and we hadn't started working yet. And so anyway, it took a while, but it was a little later than usual. But finally, Steve-O comes in, and Steve-O, had been having back problems, you know, with his back, and but when he walked in, He was whistling and, you know, just striding big old strides. And somebody said, "Steve-O, what's going on with your back?" And he said, "My back? What about my back? Oh, I don't know. I forgot."
Yeah. He was feeling no pain.
He was feeling no pain.
Did they ever go down with you again, Nancy? That was the only time, huh? That was it. And you don't know if did Steve and Shannon ever keep in touch?
No.
No, that was it. It was one of those tequila-infused nights that you'd rather forget, maybe.
Yeah.
It's a horrible hangover, a tequila hangover. It's like the worst. I wanted to ask, right around that same time, somebody named Liebel, L-I-E-B-E-L, squared up his building with chains. You remember this?
Paul Liebel. Yeah, he became the maintenance guy after Roy left.
Okay. And what do you mean squared up his building? He felt it was out of square? What did he do to it?
I'm not sure what that's talking about exactly. Oh.
He did use chains somehow to square this building.
The same building?
It said it was the assistant manager's cabin.
Yeah.
He enlarged it with a loft and installed a window and squared it up somehow.
Huh.
Did you end up in that cabin?
Yeah, I did. That's the one me and Steve were in. So that must have been before...
Maybe before
this happened.
Okay. I tried to read them in order, but some of them didn't have dates on them.
He was Paul Liebel was quite an accomplished maintenance guy, which after Roy was pretty amazing for us, because he would do things that none of us had even thought of doing, like squaring up
a building. Right. Okay, and it says here that, let's see. Terry Mish?
Terry Miche.
She would no longer allow the Packers to have free steak, and they refused to bring beer down then?
Oh, yeah, that probably happened. Yeah.
And you said Ben the Packer called her Queen or Queenie?
Uh-huh.
You remember that?
Yep. Yeah, they even gave her a t-shirt because at the time, the punk rock band called Queen...
Oh, yeah.
...was...
popular?
Popular, and they somehow got a hold of a t-shirt that said Queen on it, and it had all these sparkles all over it, and you know, psychedelic t-shirt sort of, and anyway, they gave it to Terry.
And called her Queenie. And then she started charging the employees for candy bars?
Yeah, yeah. Because, you know, like I said, she was watching costs very carefully, which nobody had done before. And, you know, this is the same as in the story about the beer hall.
Right.
The beer.
Right. And she noticed that candy bars were just, there wasn't money equivalent to the amount of candy bars.
Well, you know, we were, you know, what was going on is there were, you know, there was canteen window, and one of the things that we sold there was candy bars, and we had cases of candy bars kind of on the shelves under the counter, you know, and if somebody wanted like a Snickers bar, we just reach down and grab a Snickers bar and sell it to them.
Okay.
You know, but they were there all the time for, you know, employees were free to take whatever they wanted. And, you know, you really didn't want very much because, you know how it goes. When something's free,
right?
You probably you don't want it as much, a little bit, and then you go yuck.
Yes.
Who wants it? But you know, there were still plenty of people having candy bars and stuff. So anyway, yeah, she decided that she was going to start charging employees for candy bars, and the problem was that she said, okay, as of tomorrow, you're going to have to pay for candy bars, 15 cents or whatever, 20 cents, 25, whatever it was. You know, you're going to have to pay for candy bars. But her mistake was saying starting tomorrow. So all of a sudden, all of the candy bars were gone.
You guys took them.
Because all the employees, yeah, they grabbed all the candy bars they could and took them and put them in their room. And so that was kind of a dumb move on Terry's part.
And yeah, and that was it then. From then on, you guys had to pay.
Well, you know, I think she decided, as I remember, she decided soon after that, realizing what had happened, you know, to all the candy bars, that was not a good policy. So
she just let it go.
She relented on it. Yeah.
Okay. Were you present when Virginia Engel carried the bone person that had been brought down into the canyon on a helicopter for some kind of ranger training? They brought down a skeleton in a helicopter. And this skeleton was, like, dressed, I think.
Really?
Do you remember any of that?
No, I don't remember that at all.
That was something you wrote about. You said, Virginia Engel carried the bone person for a ranger first aid training class from the helicopter to the Phantom Ranch Ranger Station. You don't remember that?
No.
Okay. That might have been before you were there. And maybe this was a story somebody told you. There was another thing, which I think might have been before your time too, where you said in the summer of 72 there weren't enough steaks. And they took a frozen roast and they cooked it at 500. And it was charred on the outside and frozen on the inside.
Yeah.
You weren't there for that, were you?
I think I was.
And they cut it with a wood saw?
No, I wasn't there. I wasn't there. 72?
72,
said?
I think.
Yeah.
So that was before.
And that's right. Well, they were trying to serve steaks, but all they had was a roast. And so they cut the roast into steaks. They thought that might work. But it really didn't.
Not very well, huh? You talk about Scorpion Haven Cabin 11. Was there still scorpions in Cabin 11 when you started? The scorpions that would fall from the ceiling?
Is it Cabin 11, really?
It was called Cabin 10. Well, I have down 11, Scorpion Haven.
I think that was Cabin 10.
Did they eradicate the scorpions eventually, or?
No. They just, well, see, what happened was it became a revenue cabin.
Okay.
And that means that it was cleaned every day.
Oh, so they didn't have as much problem.
So it wasn't that much of a problem.
Okay. Let me see. You were hired in 75, and the manager was Glenn Hoag.
Uh-huh.
And what you liked, you got on with him?
Yeah. The only thing was he had, I don't know, you know, exactly what went on between him and his uppers, but upper people, you know, but he hired me knowing that I had low vision.
Okay.
And so he hired me with the provision that all I could do was laundry. I could just be the laundry person.
Okay.
You know, which means stripping all the beds and then putting clean linens on the beds so that the bed makers could make them and
that's what
and
he
washing the and put them in the washing.
That's what he had you do.
Yeah.
Manager. Okay.
Washing them all and then folding them all and putting them away. So that was my job.
And you did that for a couple years?
I did that until Terry Machete came down there.
And she was before or after Weir?
Before.
Okay. So you maybe only did it for a year or two, maybe. And she gave you more opportunities.
Yeah, she said, no, I want you to do everything. So she had me cooking, of all things, which was kind of scary.
Yeah, I would think. Okay, so you wrote about this strange mule killing disease that you actually like were walking along this. There was a dead mule on the bridge that crossed the Colorado River. There, do you remember this?
Uh huh.
Did they tell? Just go ahead and talk a little bit about this. It seemed like you, like. There was more than one mule who got this mule disease.
Yeah, there were a number of mules that did, and it's a story that has its kind of ugly side as well as its good side, its fun side. But it was when Wayne Paya, who was a Supai man, cowboy. He got the job of being the packer. Let me see. Yeah, he got the job of being the packer. And so, you know, who every day packs, you know, or every day of the week anyway, packs the mules with all the supplies for Phantom and then carries out the trash. That person. But he got hired as that. And it was just not too long after he got hired that mules started dying.
Oh, man.
So people were blaming him. But I don't think he had anything to do with it. I'm not sure who had anything to do with it. You know, or what if... We never did figure out what was going on.
They don't, and that's what you had said in your article, that they didn't really know why they were dying, but they were dying.
Yeah.
And you had said this particular, this dead mule that you encountered on the bridge. Do you want to tell that story? Can you remember that story about the body of the mule?
Yeah, well, yeah, so it wasn't actually on the bridge. It was, I don't know, you know how we're talking about the Black Bridge?
Right.
The trail comes up kind of parallel to the river and then turns.
Yes.
And goes across the river.
Mm-hmm.
And it was right there before it turns.
Okay.
That this mule died.
Wow.
And, at the time, we had our assistant manager was a guy named Mark Glover, and Mark was a big guy, and so him and the trail crew, you know, anybody, the Rangers, whoever they could pick, find.
Okay.
The idea was they wanted to push this dead mule.
Oh my God.
Over the edge. I mean, over, you know, like I said, it's parallel to the river. So they wanted to push it over the edge and have it fall. Then it'd fall about 40 feet probably, and then hit the beach there, which is slanted pretty steeply downhill toward the river. So they figured, you know, if they could just get it over that, over the edge of the trail, mm-hmm. which is, you know, has rocks along it and
right.
stuff, you know, over the edge of the trail, it would fall, down and bounce into the river. And then the river would wash it away. That was the hope. And so they spent all morning, you know, because they had to get it finished before the dude showed up.
Oh, my gosh. Because
they can't cross it.
Oh, God.
You know, so.
Right.
And besides, they would get.
They'd get all weirded out.
Weirded out by that, anyway. So, anyway, they dug and dug and dug and dug. And you know, digging away at the outside of the trail so they could hopefully roll the, you know, because a mule weighs several thousand pounds, so at least 1,000 pounds. So they had to kind of make it downhill towards the edge of the trail.
Okay.
You know, dig away enough of the dirt in order to do that. And they finally did it, dug this thing, and then...
They thought it would just fall into the hole that they had dug, this mule.
Yeah, that's right. They
had to push it down or something.
I'm sorry, yeah, you're right. They dug a hole in the beach down below. They dug a hole down there.
I mean, they thought they'd push it off or something?
Yeah, they were going to roll it off of the trail, and it would fall in that hole. So they had it all figured out.
Okay.
You know, how they were going to do, you know, where they had to put the hole and all this stuff. So they dug. That's a lot of work, of course.
You also said they had to push it over a 2-foot wall.
Yeah. Yeah, they did. Well, that was part of it, is getting, you know, they had to tear down that wall enough to get it over that wall.
And then when they finally pushed it over, do you remember what happened?
Yeah, they finally had it pushed over and it missed the hole. It fell just below the hole. And so, you know, they went, oh, well, what the hell, we can't, you know, they worked. By that time it was late, and they're, I guess the mules coming up, they had to deal with it. But anyway, they went, oh, shit, you know, so we'll have to do something tomorrow, you know.
Because it was missed the hole.
Yeah, they missed the hole, and everybody went to bed. And I guess in the middle of the night, the river came up. Back then, the river was constantly rising and falling, according to how much electricity they were making in Glen Canyon Dam. But anyway, the river came up and picked up the mule and washed it down creek.
And that, their problem was solved.
River, yeah, problem solved.
Well, there's one more mule story that you wrote about, this mule named Chapo. You remember that mule who died in the canyon in the stables? And this has to do with your friend Mark Glover, what he had to do to poor Chapo.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. It was, you know, too far away from anything, and the only thing they could do is fly it out, you know, fly out this body, this mule body, and there was no was no other way to get rid of it other than to fly it out, and the darn thing weighed too much for a helicopter to carry the whole thing out. So so they got well, Mark, I don't know if he volunteered or not, but they said, okay, I want you to chop up this mule so that you got, like, at least into three pieces. And
oh, God. That sounds so horrible. It's like a Tony Soprano episode.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I guess he was always talking about the noise it made when you hit a mule with an axe.
Oh, gosh. That is horrible. Okay, well, just sticking with around that same time, do you mind going a little bit longer?
No.
Okay. When this Don Weir was hired as the new manager in 77, you said he came from Big Sky Ski Resort near Bozeman, and uh-huh. He knew the Grand Canyon National Park Lodge manager, Tony Gressick. Do you know can you tell us anything about that guy?
Well, Tony Gressick is the same guy who kept hiring that. Did I tell you that last year?
I don't know.
Last time about the family that.
The people with the. No, that was Bob Weir with the dog. No, I don't think you told
this
me that.
This is
one.
A family that were friends of Tony Gressick somehow. And he would invite them to come down to Phantom Ranch and spy on us.
Okay.
And see if we were breaking rules or not.
You did tell me that story. But then you also said in the article that Bob came down to the ranch secretly as a dude to see how things were run down there, and that he never introduced himself. And he kept saying that he wanted to talk to Terry Miche, but he kept blowing her off. And then when he finally went to speak, said, "I want to speak to you," she blew him off and said she was too tired. Do you remember any of that?
Yeah, I remember that. That's just about the story.
And that was.
She was like, "Well, the hell with him."
And so he also was secretly kind of looking at you guys like that family.
Yeah, yeah, this Tony Gressick was not a nice person.
No, it doesn't sound like it.
Yeah.
And he was the head dog, right?
He was the general manager, yeah.
Did he have prejudice against, you know, your issue with your eyes and stuff?
Yeah, yeah, that was part of request to Don Weir when he went down there. He said, "I want you to fire Keith Green and Roy Starkey."
Oh, you're kidding! So you didn't write about any of that?
No.
Well, that's a good story though.
Yeah, yeah. And
how did you find out that he wanted to do that?
Don Weir. Told me.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, a lot later, you know, it wasn't just as he came down, but yeah, eventually it came out that was his duty, he was supposed to fire me.
And do you think that's something he wanted to do or something he had been instructed to do by someone else?
He'd been instructed to do it by me. He was supposed to fire me and Roy Starkey.
Wow. So who would his higher-up have been?
Of Tony Gressick?
Right.
Well, he was a general manager, so I suppose it would be somebody in the hierarchy of the...
Of the park.
No, not at the park.
Fred Harvey.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it wasn't Fred Harvey anymore. It was...
Zantara?
No, it was AmFac.
AmFac,
right.
That's right. They were there for a while, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so did you ever file any kind of discrimination thing?
No, 'cause he never fired me.
So you just stayed, and you know, you eventually were able to become a ranger and all that. So,
well, I stayed, you know, there, but of course, the ranger thing was
that was
all,
later.
Yeah, much later, and
much later,
didn't
and
have anything to do with that.
We did. Did you encounter once you became a ranger? What was it like with working with the other? Did you encounter discrimination from that group at all?
Yes. Yeah, I did. Quite a bit, actually. I was hired to be an interpretive ranger, but this guy who was the safety officer, whose name I've driven out of my head because he's such a horrible person.
Okay.
Was constantly hassling my supervisors.
Okay.
And telling them to not let me do anything that had to do with hiking into the canyon.
Okay.
Like, you know, what I wanted to do was be the Phantom Ranger.
Right.
And they're going, well, it'd be dangerous for you to be on the trail. Well, you know, like I'd hike up and down the trail.
For years.
Yeah, hundreds of times. And by this time, and, you know, I was safe. And, you know, but he was just an awful, you know, and he was doing it all behind my back,
too.
Oh,
that's horrible.
You know, so... And you know, he'd hassle my supervisors, and my supervisors then wouldn't schedule me to do any of the, like, as well, like the Cedar Ridge hike, you know, which is down to Cedar Ridge and back. He wouldn't let me do that.
And that was part of what you wanted to do.
Yeah, that's part of the job of being an interpretive ranger, but they wouldn't let me do it.
So did you file any protest with that or no?
I did eventually. Although that was for a different reason. What happened then was. Let me see how this goes. I finally was able to be in, I think it was in 2000, the year 2000.
Okay.
Or maybe it was 1999.
The year of the end of the 90s.
Yeah. I started hassling or talking to Eve Watson, who was, what was she? She was, had something to do with, fairness and, you know, you could, she was the one you were supposed to...
Like human resources or
yeah,
something?
Yeah, she's the one you're supposed to complain to if you had a complaint. Anyway, I kept hassling her, and she Anyway, I can't remember how it happened exactly, but anyhow... I got to be the Phantom Ranger. Well, I was being the Phantom Ranger. They'd let me go down when they couldn't find anybody else to do it.
But you wanted to be down there.
I wanted to be there anyway.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, but they wouldn't let me do it usually. But if somebody was sick or they're going to, you know, go off and do, they had some, you know, family event or something, one of the regular Phantom Rangers, then they they don't let me do it. You know, they schedule me to do it. So, so anyway, I had the reputation of being able to do it, and being good at it too. And
it was like a liability thing. They were they just got hung up on this liability.
Right, right. But in 99, I think it was, they finally relented and said, okay, you can be the one of the two Phantom Rangers. There's two of them. So, you know, when one's working, the other one's off, and black back and vice versa. So.
And how did you? How did that happen? How did they finally relent? Did you just keep?
I don't remember. That's what I was trying to remember.
Maybe that was the human resource person intervened or something.
She might have. She might have. But anyway, so, so I got to do it. But how'd that go? They insisted on. They like changed all the rules around, and they decided that this one big mule could be my mule, and that I had to go in and out with the packer.
Wow.
The Park Service packer, not the
okay.
Fred Harvey Packer.
All right. All right.
So the Park Service Packer had this big mule. God, what was its name? I can't remember. But anyway, so I rode down with him and the Park Service Packer, and out every time instead of hiking the trail.
Okay, that probably drove you crazy.
It did. It did, and so.
Angela, can I call you back? Trent? All right, thanks. So, go ahead. So you had to ride this mule instead of being able to walk, which you knew that trail probably so well.
Yeah, yeah.
But all the trails, Kaibab, Bright Angel, anyway, out, right?
Right, right. And the North Kaibab for that matter.
Right.
But anyway, so I started. With Eve Watson, I started what do you call it?
I filed a complaint?
A complaint and what happened, I guess, later in the summer, I had requested to be able to hike in and out, you know, and the person that was making me
ride the mules
turned out to be the superintendent of the park.
Wow.
Who was this black guy.
Huh.
Again, and that person's name I can't remember, but...
I don't remember him at all.
Yeah, he was a black guy, and he was like...
You think he'd understand about discrimination.
The kind of discrimination, yeah. It was just driving me nuts, but anyway... So I filed a... complaint. It was a long process, you know, and you have to decide, you know, whether so who's going to decide and stuff. And so I wanted it decided in Washington, D.C. And so, you know, I filed the complaint and it went into the works. But all of a sudden, the superintendent said, oh, well, you can hike in and out if you want to.
He didn't want it to go down that road, right?
No, he didn't.
Because it would have probably been a big stink, you know it?
Uh-huh.
And especially with all your years of experience in Phantom Ranch, I mean, that it would have been hard for them to justify after you worked down there for years, you know?
Uh-huh. Exactly.
Wow.
Exactly.
Well, why don't we wrap it there? And it would be interesting to talk a little bit more about, you had mentioned that too, to me also about, you know, the relationship between the staff and the management and then, the actual Park Service, you know, just things that you think we should know about that at that time, if you can think of anything else. And, you know, I also wanted to talk to you about Linda McClure. Do you remember her?
Uh-huh.
Okay, and Andy Hood.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know who this neighbor was on the south rim, but maybe it'll come to Steve. But, yeah, and then I wanted to also ask Nancy about...
I think you asked me that once before.
About which one?
Yeah.
Which one was it?
About the, you know, who this neighbor was, and neither of us...
Well, I just asked you this morning when I first got here, because, yeah, I don't know who he is, but maybe Steve will remember. But he now works at the North Rim. And I wanted to ask Nancy also about her, you know, did she have any kind of stories about the people who were in charge at the North Rim when she was there? And I don't know if she does or doesn't.
Oh, I'm sure she does, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, people... Let me just turn this off. We're going to turn this off now.